Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, August 12th. I'm Ray Graff. Today, I'm delighted to welcome one of the all-time radio greats from the Northeast, Bob Cudmore. Bob is best known as the host and producer of Contact, WGY's nighttime radio talk show from 1980 to 1993. Today, he writes the Focus on History column for the Daily Gazette in Schenectady. The column deals with local history in the Amsterdam area and is carried by the Gazette, Amsterdam Recorder, and Gloversville Leader Herald. He's also the author of 3 books on local history. I'm going to keep it loose today. We'll talk a little about the good old days of radio and some history of our region as well. Give us a call if you want to talk to the great Bob Cudmore, 800-348-2551. You can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Back after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Our guest today is Bob Cudmore, the longtime voice of WGY's nighttime radio talk show Contact from 1980 to 1993. He ruled the roost of nighttime talk radio in those days. His voice will forever be ingrained in my memory. A native of Amsterdam, Bob started in radio when he was in high school at local station WCSS. When he was at Boston University, he worked at WBUR, and like so many of us in the business, has been up and down the dial a little bit, taking jobs in Boston, Cambridge, Pittsfield. Bob co-produced and narrated the WMHT-TV Amsterdam history documentary Carpet City in 2000. His Daily Gazette column focuses on history in the Amsterdam area. Bob is the author of 3 books on local history. It's a great honor to have him on the show today. If you would like to join the conversation, give us a call. 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can always email the program as well, voxpop@wamc.org. Bob Cudmore, great to have you here.
Well, good to be here, Ray.
Great oh, he's on mic you. 5 there, guys. Sorry about that.
Huh?
There you are. We rarely use mic 5, so there you are. It's great to have you on the program.
Well, it's great to be here, Ray.
Now, listen, You're the master. If I'm doing something wrong, let me know. By all means.
I won't.
You know, I to this day remember late 80s. I was driving in Jacksonville, Florida, or near there. I was going to see my grandmother. I had already started in the business by then, but I'm driving. It's a summer day, or maybe it was spring, but it was warm down there. And on 810, your voice is booming in down
Isn't
in
that
Florida.
Something?
Yeah, that clear channel.
We used to get calls from all over. There was a guy in Wheeling, West Virginia.
Yeah.
That called us all the time. And then a caller I dubbed the Marxist from Ohio. And he'd call in.
He might be listening right now.
He might be.
Yeah.
But it was wonderful to be on the air for that long. I hated to leave it. I mean, it wasn't my decision to leave.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think have you ever been fired in radio?
Not yet, but I think the corner office is thinking about it. So you never know.
Well, anyway, I got fired or let go at WGY, and I've talked to enough of my colleagues who've all had the same experience, because you know, it's a kind of business where you lose your job from time to time, and it's just business. As they say in The Godfather, nothing personal.
This is the business you know? We have chosen. This is the life
right.
We have chosen. And that's so true. And I say that to the youngsters in the newsroom, you know, who come through. It's a tough business.
Yeah.
As when did you have your first radio job? What year was that?
It was 1962.
Wow.
Wow.
Okay. So.
Was it before you were born?
I was born in 64.
Okay.
But, you know, I think my first job was 87. But the business has changed. And by the time you left GY in 93, it was changing. When I started in 87, a lot of mom and pop stations to be mm-hmm. had. You had to work your way up to be at a station like WGY.
Yep.
And now it seems the conglomerates own, you know, a couple businesses own most of the frequencies.
Yes, they do. We actually have one... talk show host owned station in this market that Paul Vandenberg
owns.
But aside from that, the big number is what they used to call Clear Channel. It's now called iHeartRadio or something like that.
And a lot of stations sort of are in that cookie cutter. When you worked at GY, which was a powerhouse, it was an enormous station in those days. And again, you had that Clear Channel. More than once, I would be driving around at night in Florida and listening to GY. Did you have latitude to do what you wanted to do when you did Contact?
Well, yes, I did. One thing was that radio in general was more regulated then. You know, like we had to live under something called the Fairness Doctrine.
Oh, yes.
So if I had a guest on who was pro-life, I'd have to have a guest on who was pro-choice, you know, within a reasonable amount of time, or the station would get in trouble or get fined or so forth. And that changed when I was working at WGY. And it's one of the reasons I think I lost my job, because that's when the Rush Limbaughs and the Howard Sterns and so forth came in, and they could pretty much say what they wanted, and they could be sued any media outlet can be sued, but there was no federal guideline for it.
You know, we have seen, and you go back to the 60s on the radio, we have seen the landscape change. Did it make you feel in the 80s, late 80s, when this advent of talk radio, you had your Bob Grants and everybody else on days, did you feel that sort of tension in the way that you had to go about your business?
Yes. And the other thing was, I had, you know, I tend to be a liberal person.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I listen to WAMC, not that just liberals listen.
Oh, you listen to us?
Yes.
Well,
I got to
do better from now on. I didn't know.
But I did have that political persuasion, and I think it didn't help me stay at WGY, or, you know, it hurt me because the tide was conservative.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, a conservative person might argue, and he's got his justification, that, well, that was a small microcosm, and in general, people in the media are liberal. Well, that may be true, but in talk radio, late 80s, early 90s, what they wanted was somebody who was, you know, pretty fiery or conservative, like a la Rush Limbaugh.
And so one of the reasons I think I remember your work so well is that you didn't go there. You went up to a point to be entertaining, but you never went over the line. And I listened to, there was when Howard Stern was at his zenith, there was a sort of a round table of broadcasters, and Dan Ingram, who was sort of my idol as a DJ, was on and said, you know what, I think he should be able to say whatever he wants if he's funny, but I don't think he's funny. And I thought that was just great. Is radio dead?
No. I mean, radio is not dead. I mean, there are probably forces trying to kill it, perhaps even the federal government, but I think it will survive. There's more media now. But when I worked at WGY in particular, we were important as a news source. Not that you're not important as a news source now here or even at WGY, but we were the main thing. You know, saying when there was like a regional disaster, like it's funny, I would say the time when I felt most wanted doing radio was in the early 80s, was it 84, the big snowstorm of October. And
87, I think that was.
Well, whatever it was.
Yeah. Our August?
No, it was in October.
Oh, was it?
Our station stayed on the air. A lot of them went off. And that was the kind of that period of time. We heard from people who were in need. You know, we would tell them where to get water, where to get ice, things like that.
We had an ice storm, and I don't know how it was up here. I was working down in Westchester 92 or 3. It was a big, huge ice storm, and it was a blizzard. It was the blizzard of 93. 684 was closed going into northern Westchester. And I was doing the morning show, and I got in there, and suddenly all hell broke loose. And I was on the air 18 hours, I think. We were on generator power.
Right, right.
The mayor was on, Mount Kisco, and it was important work.
It was. And I remember this storm you're talking about. I was still at WGY then. It was 92 or early 93.
Something like that, yeah.
Because I was let go in the summer of 93. And I would end up sleeping at the station and doing extended time on the air. And but it was worthwhile. I mean, we felt like we were really helping people.
Bob Cudmore is our guest. We'll take a quick break here. 800-348-2551 is the number. Yeah, it's two old fellas talking about the old days of radio. We're going to get into some other things, too. Bob has written some great books about the history of the Mohawk Valley. We'll talk about whatever you want to talk to. You want to talk to a great, he's here now. 800-348-2551. We'll be back. So, you know, I have a live event coming up August 26th. It's at the Hart Clewitt Museum with my friend Kathy Sheehan, who's Rensselaer County historian and the head of the Hart Clewitt Museum. I'm not one for doing the live events that often, but if I was going to do one, it would be with Kathy Sheehan. So we are going to be there at the Hart Clewitt August 26th with the folks from Stair Galleries, who will be providing verbal appraisals of your antiques. It's kind of like that roadshow thing that we can't really say by name or else we get sued. But if you want to find out more, go to WAMC.org, click on WAMC on the road, and you can join us. It's going to be a lot of fun August 26th. It's Vox Pop, Ray Graff with you. Bob Cudmore is our guest today, longtime voice of The Night Show on WGY in the 80s and early 90s. He is also an interest. I got to say, these books, Bob, I can't put them down. The hidden history of the Mohawk Valley. Well, let's talk to Joan in Schenectady, and then I want to find out what possessed you to do this. Joan in Schenectady, how you doing?
I'm doing really well, but oh my goodness, what a tease. I was like, oh good, I hope they talk about this before I go on air. But hey, hi guys. Ray.
Yo.
First off.
What?
You must be just so happy, and I'm happy to know how happy you are.
Yeah.
And Bob, you are bringing back so many memories.
Really?
Yes. I'm older, and so WGY and my parents and the radio, it was just like a real central part of our existence, and you guys are making me happy. I want to make Ray jealous.
Why?
And Bob, I think you can help me. A year ago, I was granted gifts from a friend from his maternal grandparent and from his paternal grandparents. He received two what I would call vintage GE radios.
Lovely.
Wow.
Oh, goodness, yes. I'm looking at GE Radio K53M.
Okay.
I'm not sure what a Radiotron is, but it looks like packed.
I think they made it up.
Yeah, I think so, too.
Yeah. Radiotron.
Where are we going with this, Joan?
I want to know what you know about, like, the early transmissions. There weren't a lot going on.
Well, I do know something about the
AM.
I do know something about the history of WGY because the station today, or some years ago now, just observed its 100th anniversary.
Amazing.
And a bunch of us got together. I would say the spearhead of it sort of was a gentleman named Mike Patrick. He's since passed away, but he was working at WGY currently. But it was in 1922 that WGY first went on the air. The first voice on the air was a man called Colin Hager, who said you're listening to WGY, W for wireless, G for General Electric, and Y, the last letter in our city. And it was and that was the start of radio around here. WGY was the oldest radio station in New York State. And no, Ray, I wasn't the oldest radio man.
I didn't say that. Joan, thank you for the call. You know, you talk about AM radio, and my kids to this day, I'll say, you know, I like the sound of music on AM radios.
Really?
Yeah. When FM came rolling in, and I don't know when it started here. I started listening to it in the late 70s, maybe.
Right,
but I was still listening to AM radio straight on through. When FM came in, and this was, when did it come in? WGFM was on in the...
It was earlier, I don't know, could even have been the 20s and 30s, but it didn't really take off until they put it in cars.
Yeah. I mean, did that change the game for you when you were sort of at the zenith of your powers?
Well, yes. I mean, stations like Pix 106 became major players, WGNA, the country station, became a major player where it had not existed before. And, of course, it did take audience away from WGY.
You know, growing up, I was about a quarter mile, maybe less, from WOKO. Remember the old country station?
Yes. In fact, my good friends Joe Gallagher and Brian Jackson worked there. I don't know if you know those names.
I do remember those names.
Yeah.
You know, the thing is, though, that station, the huge GY towers are still there. They're directional. They're a three antenna array, and you can, they're phased, and you can point them most of your power in one direction. Well, my house must have been directly in the real powerful lobe, because Donna Fargo would come over our vents. and I said, Mom, I'm hearing country music, and there's no radio on. And I figured out it was resonating the forced hot air vents in my house.
Well, let me ask you this. Why did you – who is Ray Graff? I'm from Amsterdam, New York.
Yeah.
Where are you from?
I'm from Delmar.
What's your?
Delmar.
Delmar.
Yeah. I grew up there. I went south for a while and then came back, you know.
When you were a kid?
No. When I was a grown-up, I took a job down there.
When did you go into radio?
1987.
But and why? See, I went into...
That's a good question.
I went into radio when they had an audition at my high school for an announcer. They would hire a high school kid, and it was always a boy then, to work weekends at WCSS in Amsterdam. And I took the audition and came into a room like this and had to read the news and the weather for the WCSS area. But I came in second. I thought, oh, well.
Who came in first?
The kid who came in first refused the job.
Interesting.
And he later went into law, and I think was the better for it financially. And so, that's how I started. I guess I'm going on kind of a tangent
here. That's fine.
But another friend of mine, Warren Garling, who was Chris Warren on the radio at the WGNA, he has become kind of the leader of our monthly gatherings we call the Louie Lunch.
Yeah.
And he has interviewed many of the people who've worked in local radio. He should interview you.
And I don't do interviews.
About why they became... how they got into radio, and there's a whole subset of them who, like me, did it when we were in high school. I mean, I was on the air in high school. My friend Dave Green, he had a home radio station when he was in high school.
Ah.
And then...
A pirate, was he?
I guess something like that.
I'll be darned.
He might have done it legitimately, because Dave always is going by the rules.
Right.
But we all... one of the reasons I went into radio, I guess I'm stumbling to say, is I wanted to meet girls. You know, and I did.
Interestingly, it seems that the glamour... I was going to ask you this. You're a little older than I was. But when I started in radio, it was still kind of a hip thing to do.
Oh, yeah.
You know, back in the day, it must have really been the apex.
When I was at WCSS in 1962, I had like a blessed hour and a half or 2 hours of rock and roll music on a Sunday night.
Yes.
And the kids in my high school, or many of them, listened. You know, the girls, the boys, you know.
Yeah.
It made me something. See, and so there's a lot of people that got into radio that way. But that wasn't for you.
Well, I tell you one thing. Some of the best times I had early on was doing Oldies Morning Show. I mean, to me, that was spinning the old vinyl. The kids today don't know from tape, cutting tape or cart machines or anything else. They look at me like I have two heads when I talk to them about that in the newsroom.
Don't want to offend people, but we ended the broadcast day with, I don't forget who the bishop was, the Catholic bishop, with the rosary. And the rosary was on a reel-to-reel tape, and it had been spliced many times. So it would go something like this. Well, anyway, it would slow down. Hail Mary, full of grace. The Lord is with thee.
Oh, gosh.
And
nice.
I never knew what to do. So I mean, they're sort of by hand moving the rosary up. But, we did different things. You were talking about cueing a record.
Yeah.
Which—
So much fun.
We don't do anymore.
No. Bob Cudmore is our guest. We are just shooting the breeze about old radio, but I want to talk a little bit about history. And if you want to jump in, feel free. 800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. So you did radio. You were extremely successful. You have influenced many of us in this business. And then you start writing history books. Bob, what possessed you to write this amazing... You've written three, I think. I have two here in front of me, Hidden History of the Mohawk Valley and Lost Mohawk Valley. They're beautiful books, and I couldn't put them down. What possessed you?
Television.
What do you mean?
WMHT, the TV station, the manager there, and his name eludes me. A lot of names elude me at my age.
Oh, I'm with you there.
He said, you know, you could probably do a documentary. WMHT did a series of documentaries about cities, you know, Albany, Troy, Schenectady, and it became Amsterdam's turn. And he said, I think you can do Amsterdam. So he assigned me a producer, the great Steve Dunn. I don't know if you ever run across Steve.
That name is very familiar.
Yeah. And Steve and I at first didn't like each other, you know, because I'm sort of Steve is an artist. I'm sort of a BS artist, you know. But
you're in the right place.
We eventually, you know, came to an agreement, and we did this hour and a half documentary on Amsterdam history. The mills, the hills, the grills, the sports, the ethnic groups, and so on and so forth. All in this documentary came out in the year 2000. And I said to myself, self, I think we can do more with this. So I approached the Daily Gazette. I was already writing an occasional op-ed piece for them.
Yeah.
I said, I could do a history column about the Amsterdam area, the Mohawk Valley. He said, really? Okay. We tried. And so it's become my longest gig. I've been writing that column now since the year 2002, and we're now in 2025.
Do you ever fall short of ideas for that week's column?
Well, then I go back to the archives.
Yeah.
But, yes, I mean, of course I would, but there's a lot there. Well, let me tell you, I meant to tell you at least one Amsterdam history story. Who's the great, I don't know if he's great now, the quarterback for the New York Giants?
Well, there have been plenty of them. I mean, what decade are we talking about?
Well, now.
Eli Manning?
No. Well, anyway.
Jackson Dart? Wilson?
That's the man.
Russell Wilson. Okay.
Russell Wilson's people came from Amsterdam.
Yeah.
Is the basic point of the story. His great-grandfather was a man named Harrison Wilson, who came up from Kentucky with Dr. Gates on PBS talks about as the Great Migration of African Americans from south to north. So he came up to Amsterdam I think he came in actually 1910, and he tried to get a job as a bricklayer, and he couldn't get it because of his race.
Yeah,
but he started doing work for a man named McGibbon, who was a prominent businessman and landowner. There was a terrible fire at one of McGibbon's downtown properties on the main street. There was a bowling alley in there. Two of the pin setters, who were young women, were in danger, and Harrison Wilson saved them. McGibbon was eternally grateful, and when McGibbon died, he left Wilson a parking lot in downtown Amsterdam.
Really?
And Wilson had a fairly big family, and they worked that parking lot to make extra money or to make money. And the offspring of Wilson and his wife Marguerite became well-known and famous in different fields, including Harrison Wilson Jr., who was in the American Navy, and then he played football. He ended up becoming a teacher in college, and he was president of a predominantly black college for a number of years. His son, Harrison Wilson Jr., was Wilson III. I'm almost done with this.
That's fine.
And he became a lawyer. He tried out for San Diego in the NFL, but that didn't work out. And then he met an early death, and that leaves Russell. Russell is the great, his great-grandfather was the original Harrison Wilson. His grandfather was Harrison Wilson Jr. We've yet to be able to get Russell Wilson to come to Amsterdam, the last I knew.
Wow.
There are different people who have tried to work that out.
Does he know about the connection? He must know.
Yes, I've told him. I've communicated with him, and I've had a certain relationship with one of his brothers, who's Benjamin Wilson, the third or fourth or whatever, and he's a big-shot lawyer in Washington. So one of these days, we're hoping that...
You know, when you do these histories, and we're talking to Bob Cudmore today, a radio great, and something of a historian, he has columns that run, it's in the Gazette, it's in the Amsterdam paper, the Gloversville?
Yeah, the Gloversville paper.
Yeah. When you do these histories, and we'll get to the phones in a moment, are you more interested in the people, like Russell Wilson's great-great-grandfather, or the events? Like Chapter 33 in Hidden History of the Mohawk Valley, just open it up, the day we bombed Fort Plain. So are you more interested in people or events when you look back at it?
Probably the people.
Yeah.
And I know something about it, but I'm not focused on the quote-unquote big history of the Mohawk Valley, the American Revolution.
Right.
I've done some columns about that. But I'm more into the carpet mill era, like my father was a carpet weaver.
So you're from around here from the beginning.
Am, yes. And my father was an immigrant. He came over when he was three from England. And there were a bunch of them that came from England that worked almost immediately in the carpet mills or different kinds of textile mills.
Interesting. Bob, here's an email. And then we'll take a break, and then we'll go to the phones. 800-348-2551. Bob Cudmore is our guest. Christine in Waterville Heights says, question for both of us, but I won't answer this. I'll leave this to you. Are there any news stories that are almost too emotional for you, but you had to report them? I love that question. Christine's a regular correspondent on this show, and that's a great question.
Well, I can't think of one offhand, because although I covered some sad stories, I wasn't exactly ever a news reporter as such. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I know what you mean.
Going out covering covering news stories, but I think that I almost hate to say it today. The news disturbs me more than ever.
But you have to divorce yourself from a lot of that to do your job. One of the things I learned, and I don't know who taught me way back when, was, you know, no one really, as a broadcaster, no one really cares what you're feeling. Your job is to make people feel better for a little while. And I've carried that with me forever. I think that is the best thing you can do. Your problems, everybody has their own problems.
Yeah, you're right. In fact, bringing up one of my friends I've mentioned already, Chris Warren, Warren Garling, he says that, you know, that he always felt that his job was to make people have a better day.
Yeah.
You know, when he
even
was...
Even for a minute or two.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of that, let's do some underwriting. 800-348-2551 is our number. Bob Cudmore is our guest today. I could not be happier, and we will get back to the phone calls in a moment. Frank Zappa, what's new in Baltimore here on Vox Pop? 800-348-2551 is the number. Bob Cudmore is our guest today. We've been down memory lane, up and down and sideways. Mike in Saratoga writes in, "Hi, I see that Bob graduated from Boston University like another famous DJ, Howard Stern. Does he have any comment about his time as a college DJ, and did they ever cross paths?"
No, he's younger than I. Bill O'Reilly also went to Boston U, the cable talk show host.
Yep.
But it was at Boston University that I first encountered public radio. I worked for a man named Will Lewis, who managed WBUR, their college, then college station, and kind of transitioned it to what is called public radio.
Yeah.
And now it's kind of a big deal.
It is a big deal.
In public radio. One of our relatives worked there for a while. He's now gone over to the other public broadcasting operation in Boston, WGBH. But WBUR was, you know, quite an experience. I was glad to have that opportunity. I remember covering the hearings. You know, they had set up some sort of link, and I was in a studio listening to congressional testimony when they created the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, which I believe the current president has, or anyway, I think
it's defunded to, yeah, you know, so that was in the 80s, right? That was in the Reagan era?
No, it was in the 60s, actually.
Was it really?
It was when Johnson was president. That's my recollection.
Oh, yes. It was the shell game of how to fund public radio that happened in the Reagan administration, where they said, we're going to give the money to CPB, who gives it to the stations, who gives it back to NPR.
Yeah.
So, anyway, go on.
Well, that was one of the arguments I remember was public radio was kind of a raid against public TV, because TV was getting the lion's share of the money, and radio people like my boss Will Lewis were there saying, "What about us? Give us, throw us a bone here for crying out loud!"
We're always the back seat. Let's go to Miriam and Troy. You're on with Bob Cudmore. Hello.
Hello.
Hello. You're on.
I'm enjoying your conversation. I was a schoolgirl in the 40s when my grandmother always had the radio on in the morning. And I believe this guy's name is Forrest Willis. Played music, played the news, which probably made me a news addict for the rest of my life. But he did like to play marches. And he'd put a march on and say it was time to march around the
march around the breakfast table. You know,
which I really couldn't imagine doing, you know, in terms of the room there, but it made me a radio addict as well, and I was really enjoyed it then, and I'm still enjoying it.
Well, I hate to interrupt you, but Forrest Willis, I believe, was a WABY. That's all right. Another station, but it brings up your call. Brings up the generation before. I mean, I was enamored of.
Yes, I know it. That's how you were around then.
Well, I was enamored of people like a WGY, like Martha Brooks, who was a pioneer female broadcaster, and she was still alive. And I knew her and interviewed her a couple of times. There were also a couple of other people that I recall. I had mentioned the original announcer, Colin Hager, but we had Earl Putney. And we had
I remember that name.
Yeah, right. He was on TV in addition to a radio, Howard Tupper. He also was
Hi, Small Fry. I remember him well, yes.
And Bill Edwardson, who was a classic morning man.
Absolutely.
Well, anyway.
Well, thank you.
Did he play marches?
No, he didn't play marches.
I don't know. I was out of town by the 50s, but that was a kind of an effort. I think it worked to get us going in the morning.
And I hate to keep needling Ray, but when was your first radio job?
87.
But what did you do?
I was, thank you for the call, Miriam. I was, for a time, a 40-hour-a-week announcer at an elevator music station.
Okay.
That was my first one. And I quickly transitioned to commercial copywriting and production, which I thought was where I was going to go until the station got sold. And the guy said, okay, we're putting you on overnight as a DJ. So
really?
I was 9 to 5, and then I said, oh, this is how the business works. Okay.
Was that here in Albany?
Yeah, it was around here. It was in the copywriting job was at a long-gone station out of Canal Square, and then it was sold, and I don't even know what it is today. Charlie is in Oneonta. Charlie, you're on.
Yeah, can you hear me?
You betcha.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I just want to comment on your AM commentary about music. Now, I grew up in the late 60s, mid 70s, listening to AM radio in the parents' car. And there's something about that mono mix on AM for early rock and roll that you just can't beat.
Agreed.
And they come out with all these reboxed, remastered sets of Beatles music and Creedence and stuff. And it's not necessary. Give us that original mix, you know? Mm.
And I like the slightly lo-fi, just a little bit off the highs and the lows that you get out of the AM radio transmitters. Lovely.
I mentioned my friend Dave Green.
One of my favorite memories is laying in bed as a kid with the clock radio and hearing O.E. Como Va come on the radio, and that lead guitar would just be the most prominent thing you could hear. And nowadays, it's buried in all the mix of high-end.
Yeah.
High-end with metal overflows.
Go ahead, Bob.
I mentioned my friend Dave Green. He always told me when I ended my radio career working back in Amsterdam. You know, I worked for the state for a while, the state university, and then I started doing radio jobs again in 2001 until I finally retired in 2014. And where I worked was the other station in Amsterdam, which by then was called WVTL, the Valleys Talk Leader.
Ah.
But we would play music at some point, and Dave was always attuned to how radio sounds, and we broadcast from the transmitter out on Route 30 in the town of Florida. It's still how they broadcast that station today. And Dave said he thought that's what gave it, even though it was an AM signal, a lot of clarity or punch.
Being in the...
Yeah, because we didn't have to travel anywhere over phones or things like that to get to our transmitter.
Interesting. You know, a good AM transmitter still sounds tremendous. I think that maybe the attention from most corporate entities not quite on the AM side anymore, right, but right. It was a wonderful thing. Hey, Charlie, thanks for the call. Let's go to Alfred, Massachusetts. Wynn, you're on with Bob Cudmore.
Hey, Bob. Hi. Listen, got you so much. I want you to know that not only the boys for your show. 1961, I was in Mount Carmel, Siberia, Catholic school again. And I had a Saturday radio show and did exactly the kind of things that you were doing. And that's where I met my boyfriend, and that was just wonderful experience. And I do want to say that it's so serious that, first of all, as long as we have cars, we don't have to worry about us never having radio. We're going to have cars forever with radio. And I sure do appreciate everything that you've been talking about. It just really brought back a lot of New Orleans memories and Katrina and how independent we were on radio, et cetera.
Yeah.
Everything was just that you were saying was fascinating. Thanks for being on.
Wynn, thanks
okay.
a lot.
If we can go back to a history story, Amsterdam also had a well-known opera singer, Albert da Costa. He died tragically in an automobile accident, but came from Amsterdam, sang in a lot of the local productions, and then went to the Metropolitan Opera.
Interesting. You know, I love these books, and thanks for signing them, and I'm going to read them all probably tonight. Bob Cudmore is our guest. The number is 800-348-2551 if you want to jump in here in the waning moments. To me, you know, it's funny. I was thinking about the old days when I was a kid and just starting out and when I was a youngster. The blinking lights, the analog meters, the reel-to-reels turning. There's just something to me, being on this side of the microphone, that was so magical about it that will never be here again.
Well, a lot of people who went into radio had a real, I don't know what, love affair with the technology.
Yeah.
You know, they just loved it. One thing I did want to bring up is a name I mentioned several times now, Warren Garling. He sort of shepherds this old-time radio luncheon, which this coming week is going to be an old-time radio dinner. We have a dinner once a year where the people get together and schmooze and talk about the old radio days. And I actually started that lunch. There's an odd connection to WAMC in that I think a woman worked here named Korea. Did she not? Maybe that was before your time.
How long ago?
Oh, probably 20 years now.
Oh, maybe Karen. Yeah, possibly.
Well, anyway.
Yeah.
Her father was Louis Korea, and Louis was an engineer at WGY, and he spanned the time period from when the engineers were actually entertainers. They ran the board, and so they did the control board. So they would do some of the funny bits for DJs like Bill Edwardson and so forth. And that was Lou Correa. But Lou was also a regular a transmitter engineer. Unfortunately, it being radio, he lost his job. And he was kind of bummed out about that. And I remember he wouldn't go out. He wouldn't go to parties. He wouldn't go to this or that. I said, well, what if you just have lunch with me? He said, okay. So we started calling it the Louis Lunch. And so we expanded it to people who, and the first criterion was you had to have been fired at WGY. But then we've long surpassed that. Now we have just, you know, anybody.
It's not quite so exclusive.
No, it's not so much so exclusive.
All right, let's grab a call or two more before we wrap it up here with Bob Cudmore. What a fun day. I really appreciate you being here. Richard's in Rensselaer. Richard, you're on.
Oh, yes. That woman asked about the term Radiotron. I'm looking at my Radiotron Designer's Handbook. It says RCA, RCA Victor, and Radiotron are registered trademarks of the Radio Corporation of America.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Okay.
So that's that.
Thank you. And you had a question,
now, would
Richard.
You know what was the second? What was the second station in this area? Would you know?
The second station.
There could have been that WABY I mentioned or WOKO, but honestly, I don't know, yeah. So I shouldn't say.
Richard, thanks a lot. Let's go to John in Del Mar. John, you're on with the great Bob Cudmore.
Hey, guys. How are you doing?
Okay.
Pretty good. How are you?
I'm an old radio guy. I've been retired for a couple of years now. 53 years, and I never got fired, so I'm proud of that.
Good for you. Where did you work? You worked here?
Oh, I know this guy.
All over the place. I retired from 1010 Winds in New York, and Ray knew me from there.
The big time.
Yep, great guy.
So here's the question. You guys have been around the block a few times. Do you recall any stunts that were pulled on the announcer, such as lighting the news copy on fire as it was being read?
And yes, all the
anything
time.
Anything that you can say on the radio?
Well, nothing. I mean, I tried to make Brian Shields laugh several times and failed.
Yeah.
He was a very steadfast fellow. What about you, Bob?
Well, nothing happened to me as such. I mentioned my friend Joe Gallagher. He and another DJ, Don Weeks, who's passed away, but they used to kind of scam each other. They'd have, like, on April Fool's Day, they would do things, I don't know, send a cleaning crew over to his house to clean his house, things like that. But they would do stunts. And I would get involved with them just sort of as an onlooker. Like, they challenged each other to a luge race up in Lake Placid. And so I went and actually covered it. And somehow, and it always seemed that Don won. And so Don Weeks won that. And
interesting. Joe he lost. Actually was in a luge.
They were.
That is insane.
I mean, I'm the one that, see, they brought me along because I was sort of the talk guy and I'm not going to make this up.
Yeah.
And they really did it.
Well, neither one died, so I think they're both winners. Yep. Hey, John, we're about out of time here, buddy, but thanks for calling. Leslie writes in, take my FM AM transistor every time I travel. Portugal, France, India. Also listen all night long here in the Hudson Valley. You guys are heroes and the last of a dying breed. Do you feel like we're the last of a dying breed, Bob?
I hope not.
I don't know. We got some youngsters here who are pretty darn good.
So. They are. They are very good. No, in fact, I love the poor man here. Like, my wife accompanied me. She's a great fan of the Round Table and Joe Donahue and so forth.
Oh, really? You ought to come in for that. There's no room. But, I mean, you think it's crowded in here? Come in here during the Round Table, and then you'll see what it's like. Bob Cudmore, we are out of time. If people want to find your books, where are they?
Well, it's hard to find them.
Really?
But you can find them on Amazon and
so forth.
You asked me before if I have made any money on this.
Yeah.
I really haven't. And I've sort of come to the conclusion at my advanced age, which is 79, not that I should mention it, I sort of don't see myself as being in the publishing business anymore.
All right. Well, listen, you're 79. I think you're about ready for the second career here at AMC. All right. We're going to sign you up. Bob Cudmore. We got to do it again, man. Thank you for being here. Thank you very much, Ray.
It's been a pleasure.
Support comes from Daughters of Sarah, Albany, New York, providing a continuum of care for seniors, offering them opportunities to live at age gracefully with dignity and respect. Daughtersofsarah.org. Asia Barong Gallery, Great Barrington. Campus includes Asian sculpture, park, furniture showroom, and ethnographic art gallery. China, Japan, Korea, India, Southeast Asia. AsiaBarong.com. At the Tang Teaching Museum and Art Gallery at Skidmore College, providing exhibits, public events, and educational programs for audiences in the Capital District and beyond, skidmore.edu/Tang. Thanks again to Bob Cudmore for being here. I had so much fun. I hope you did, too. Thanks to our engineer, Riley Phillips. Backwards would be Philip Riley. It would also work. You know what I mean? Thanks to Barb King for screening the calls. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow... All right, we're going to limber you up tomorrow. It's physical therapy with Matthew Goodemote. Add massage therapy with Laura Brown. You're going to feel great by the end of the show. We'll see you tomorrow at 2:00.